Let me go ahead and just warn you for a second. If you've attended Wellspring for a while, you know this about me, but if you're a guest, you don't, so let me tell you right now. I'm weird. I'm very weird. Thanks, Dad. I'm weird, and I'm weird about a lot of things, but the thing I'm weird about today is that I really, really, really like, no, actually, I love politics, like a lot. Like, I really do. And nerd alert, when I was a kid, I would come home from school from time to time, and I would turn on the channel C-SPAN, and I would watch it because I liked it, because I thought it was cool. And so I even when I got to college, I majored in political science, loved politics. One of the biggest regrets I have of college is that I never served in any kind of campaign. I was in Columbia for two gubernatorial races, and I never volunteered for any of them. And I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, why did you never do that? You were there. And it hit me why I never volunteered. It's because I would have had to been at the bottom of the campaign. Like, I would have had to, like, get coffee and stuff. And I would have wanted to be in charge of the campaign, you know, shaping the message and all that kind of stuff. Because that's really what I like. What I really like about politics is the message. It's, you know, how do you communicate to people something that you think they need to hear and that you think is going to make their life better? You know, how do you do that? And the way politicians do that is it's called a stump speech. All right? I love a good stump speech. Like, I'll flip back from the cable channels, and if somebody's giving a stump speech, man, I'll stop. Because I'm fascinated by it. I think it's because of what I do for a living. You know, I speak in front of people for a living. You don't cheer as much as political crowds do. We need to work on that. Wouldn't that be awesome? After every time I say something, y'all just cheered? That'd be fantastic. Look into that. But seriously, a stump speech, you know, the goal is to take people from one place to another, you know, to help them see what's good or what's wrong in their lives or the country or, you know, who's out to get them. And to say, you know, they say, I'm the answer. Well, I'm not saying that. You know, I try to point you to God. But the speech is the same. I'm fascinated by speeches. And quite, I don't mean this in a lovey way, but a really good speech is actually quite romantic to me. I just think they're breathtaking. Again, I don't mean it in the lovey way. Settle down. Settle down. But I'm fascinated by language. I'm fascinated. I mean, it's the same thing as an attorney that can make a closing argument and just captivate a room. You know, I'm fascinated by that. And so the reason I bring all this up is not just to embarrass myself. The reason I bring this up is because the passage we're looking at today is one where Paul, the Apostle Paul, Paul was basically the church's first missionary. He went all around the known world at that time telling people about Jesus. All right, probably spread the message of Christ more than any other human ever. The impact he had. He wrote over half the New Testament. And just an amazing, amazing man for God and real passion for spreading Jesus. But what we're going to look at today is a speech that Paul gives. And it's a very powerful speech. He gives it to in Athens, which was in Greece. It was a center of thought. It was a hub kind of the ancient world. And Paul gets brought before a big group of people. And they say, all right, big boy, go. So actually, let me kind of read to you the background before we get to the speech. But the speech is important because there's a message in it that if we get today, it'll change your lives, 100%. So here's the background. If you have your Bibles, we're going to be in Acts 17. We're going to start at verse 16, and we're just going to go. We're going to see how far we can get. But we're going to start in Acts 17, and here's kind of the background. It says, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, there were some folks coming to meet him, but Paul didn't wait on them. He was busy. So he said, he was deeply troubled by all the idols he saw everywhere in the city. So he saw idols everywhere. He saw all these signs of these people missing out on God. So here's what he did. He went to the synagogue to reason with the Jews and the God-fearing Gentiles. And he spoke daily in the public square to all who happened to be there. So that's what Paul would do. Paul would go to a new town and he'd start telling people about Jesus. Because that's what Paul did. Because Paul got this whole fact of we are Christ's ambassadors. You know why he got it? Because he wrote it. He wrote that. We are Christ's ambassadors. That we speak for God when we plead, come back to him. And so Paul would go from town to town and he would try to share. He would go first to a church. Because where else to go find lost people than a church, right? That's funny. You're supposed to laugh at that. Where else to find lost people? So he would go to church and he'd try to tell them about Jesus. But eventually Paul would end up just talking to people in the town square, just hanging out with people, talking about Jesus. And while he was here in Athens, he talked to some people and a little debate happened. Verse 18, he also had a debate with some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers. Epicureans and Stoics were two schools of thought back then. I'm not going to get into it because it's boring. All you need to know is there were two schools of thought. They had a philosophy of life that revolved around no God. They had come up with the answers to life apart from God. All right? That's all you need to know. So Paul's debating with these people. And when he told them about Jesus and his resurrection, they said, what's this babbler trying to say with these strange ideas he's picked up? Others said, he seems to be preaching about some foreign gods. More politics. It was a debate. And during the debate, they called each other names. Right? That's what we see now. Have you seen these debates lately? Like, it's not really a debate. They just see who can say the meanest thing about each other while still smiling. Right? It's like, you're disgusting. Or you're a communist Nazi freak. You know? That's all they do. That's all they do. It's not really a debate. So anyway, Paul's debating these people, and it didn't really work out too well. They didn't get what they wanted. So then they said, verse 19, then they took him to the high council of the city. So here's what happened. Epicureans and Stoics were like, you know what, this is kind of interesting. We don't really get what he's talking about. But, we got nothing better to do. So, let's go. And so they take him before the high council. He probably spoke before 300 to 400 people. These were the most influential men in Athens. They were the leaders. They were the opinion makers. All right, and so Paul gets a shot to speak in front of them. Here's what they said. Come and tell us about this new teaching, they said. Because you are saying some rather strange things, and we want to know what it's all about. Verse 21. It should be explained that all the Athenians, as well as the foreigners in Athens, seem to spend all their time discussing the latest ideas. They love to talk. They love to hear all the, they didn't really do anything, but they love to hear all the ideas and debate them back and forth, kind of like the cable news organizations. Not going to do anything about it. They just like to talk. And so, here we go. Paul, standing before the council, addressed them as follows. So here he is. He clears his voice. He gets a shot to give one speech in front of 300 of the most influential men in Athens, trying to share the gospel. And here's how he starts. Men of Athens, I notice that you are very religious in every way. For as I was walking along, I saw your many shrines. See, Paul's a good speaker. He knows what he's doing. He immediately tries to identify with the crowd, tries to pump them up. And it tries to say, I know who you are. I feel your pain. And so, you know, he tries to identify with him and says, I understand you. I understand that you're religious in every way because I saw your many shrines. See, the city of Athens, they were kind of an equal opportunity religious worshiper. All right? Pretty much everybody had a deal. They had a shrine for everybody. If you believed you should worship a goat, well, they'd put a shrine of a goat and say, have at it. All right? They were very open to new ideas. They kind of felt like, you know, you have your opinion. I'm going to have my opinion. Your truth is good for you. My truth is good for me. We're not going to really step on each other's toes. Let's just all be enlightened together and understand that there's multiple ways to God if there really is a God. Blah, blah, blah. That's how I feel about that. Because it sounds a great deal like today, doesn't it? It sounds a whole lot like what we live in right now in 2010 of this concept of, oh, there's really no such thing as absolute truth. It's just kind of whatever's good for me. You know, I get really spiritual with my beads. And so, or I do art and it's really special to me. And, you know, sorry, I'm making fun of it, but I can't help it because it's ridiculous. But same exact thing then as today, this concept of complete and total lack of there being anything that's absolutely true. It was all relative, all completely dependent on how you felt about a certain thing. So it may seem kind of weird in that setting, in that context, that Paul would open up and say, I see that you are very religious in every way. Because it would almost seem like they're the opposite of religious, right? Because they're saying, no, we don't believe, everybody has their own deal, everybody has their own faith, everybody gets to have their own thing, we have all kind of shrines, you worship where you, it's almost like food court religion. You've been to a food court, right? And so, you have to wonder, all right, what is Paul, what's his point? What is he trying to say? Why would he open it up and say, I see you guys are religious in every way? Why would he say that to this group of people who really aren't that religious the way we'd see it? And here's why. It's because Paul was making a point that's incredibly important. He was trying to sound nice, but he was really kind of doing that backhanded, I'm going to say something, but I'm really kind of getting you. Because here's what he was pointing out. Here's what he's pointing out for them and for us. It's a truth for every human being on the planet, then and now. Here it is. We are all very religious in every way because we all worship something. Every one of us worships something. It's not a matter of what. I mean, it's not a matter of if, but a matter of what. And see, for the Athenians, it was their intellect. It was that they were so smart and so open-minded and so gracious and so understanding and so enlightened that it made them feel good about themselves, made them feel better than other people, made them feel secure. They puffed each other up. You're smart. No, you're smart. And, you know, they'd come together and debate about things and, oh, aren't we so smart because we don't judge people and all that kind of stuff. That was theirs. What about you? What about you? What, if I asked you the question, you know, what are you worshiping? You'd probably, you know, say, nothing, thank you very much. But you probably are. You're probably worshiping money. Probably worshiping a relationship you're in. Or chasing a relationship you're in. Maybe it's your job. Maybe it's yourself. Maybe you worship yourself. See, it's one of my favorite things to do is when I talk to someone who claims to be an atheist. I'm like, no, you believe in God. You just think you're God. You still believe in one. It's just you. You trust yourself and your intellect to figure everything out and be smarter than other people. So see, we all trust in something and worship something. And if you don't think so, let me ask you this question. What are you trusting right now to make your life better? What do you think is going to fix whatever problem it is you have right now? What are you chasing? What are you hoping for? Because I know there's something there. I know there is. I know you're worshiping something because I know it the same way Paul knew they were worshiping other gods. Paul knew it because he said, I see your many shrines. Well, guess what? The reason I know you're worshiping thing, and hear me, if I could preach this message like this today, and like, come at me too, I would, because I'm in this. All right, this is me too. I'm not trying to say I'm got this figured out and you don't. I'm saying we don't, but God does. Not that that's God, that's a scream. But you get my analogy, I hope. Here's all I know. Paul looked at shrines. I can see your shrines. That's how I know you're worshiping other things. Because I can see your shrines. What's a shrine, you ask? All a shrine is a symbol. It just symbolizes what it is you care about. It symbolizes what you think is important. And I know what you think is important. I know what you value. You know why? Because I see where you put your treasure. That's how you know. Your treasure is very simple to measure. It's your time, your talent, and your money. Let me follow you around for a week. Let me see how you spend your time. Let me see how you spend your talent, and let me see how you spend your money, and I'll tell you what you worship. I'll tell you what your gods are. Because you are building shrines to them. And we all have them. We all do. The Athenians did, and we did. First question, ask yourself, what is it for you? Where are you putting your treasure? How are you being religious in every way? What are you counting on to make your life better? Let's keep going. Paul says, and one of your altars had this inscription on it, to an unknown God. See, the Athenians were smart. Even though they were so sure that they had it all figured out, there was this little check in them. This little check, like maybe we don't. So they had actually created an idol to an unknown God. Kind of a catch-all. It's kind of like if you are ever praying before you go to bed and you realize you're really tired. Instead of praying, you say, God, just please bless everyone, amen. Have you ever done that? Just bless everyone and everything, amen. That's kind of like your catch-all, your cover-all. God, if I pray to bless everyone, then you'll fix all those things I've heard about today. Well, that's kind of what this was. This was to an unknown God. It was just kind of their safe haven, just in case. Just in case we're wrong, we're going to put this guy over here. And this is what Paul says. This God, whom you worship without knowing, is the one I'm telling you about. He is the God who made the world and everything in it. Since he is Lord of heaven and earth, he doesn't live in man-made temples. And human hands can't serve his needs, for he has no needs. He himself gives life and breath to everything, and he satisfies every need. Translation. Paul's saying, the God I'm telling you about, the God I believe in, created the world, and he created everything in this world, which means he doesn't live in a little shrine you could make for him. It means he doesn't need you to do anything to take care of him. Doesn't need you to serve him because, you know, he's God. So there's not really much he needs from you. See, Paul's making a point here that he's going to make through the rest of the passage, and it's hugely important. I got to pause and explain. It is so important because here's the deal. If we can get the point Paul's making today, really, it will not only radically change your life, it will radically change the lives of everyone you know. If we can get this point. Because what Paul's doing is he's building an argument, and he's basically hoping the Athenians are going to start asking themselves a question. And Paul basically asks them this question. He's like, I see all these gods. I see all these shrines that you're serving. And I'm telling you about my God. And when I look at the two, it makes me ask this question. How good are your gods? Really? How good are they? I mean, because my God, he created everything that you see. He's way too big to live in these man-made temples, these man-made things. In fact, my God, he created your idols. My God created them. He's bigger than they are. Those things that you worship, that you love, that you think can make you feel better, my God created those things. Let's keep going. From one man, he created all the nations throughout the whole earth. He decided beforehand where they should rise and fall. And he determined their boundaries. See, he's even saying, the things you have clung to for generations, the greatness of your nation, the wisdom, your mighty warriors that you've looked up to, your ability to conquer other peoples, all those things that you think you've had control over? Nope. No, my God. He did that. He's been in charge the whole time. And he's even in charge of you. Let's keep going. Because Paul starts to begin to explain why God does these things. 27. His purpose was for the nations to seek after God and perhaps feel the way toward him and find him. Though he is not far from any one of us, for in him we live and move and exist. See, my God, he created all this stuff, and he's been orchestrating this whole thing for this moment because he wants to be found by you. He wants to be known by you because you can't live, move, you can't even exist apart from him. You can't take a breath if God doesn't want you to. That's my God. He's everywhere and he's bigger than you think and more powerful than you could ever imagine. That's my God. Let's keep reading. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. And since this is true, we shouldn't think of God as an idol designed by craftsmen from gold or silver or stone. And see, this is kind of the climax of Paul's talk. This is where he's really getting going. He's probably screaming at this point, and people are going, yeah, woohoo! You know, he's in here. Because here's the deal. Here's his point. He's saying the God of the universe, the one Paul worshiped, the one I worship today, and the one Wellspring preaches, is the only thing. He is the only one worthy of our time, resources, and talents. He's the only thing worthy of our total devotion. Because everything else came from him. He's the creator. He's the designer. What Paul's saying is, why on earth would you worship created things when you can worship the one that created the things? Why? Why would you do it? Does it make any sense to worship a created thing when you could worship the creator of the thing? At all. See, Paul's pleading with the Athenians. He's trying to say to them, and I believe to us today, my God, he's bigger and smarter than your gods. He is. He's in charge. He planned this whole thing, which means it's silly for you to worry about tomorrow. He's not something that can be contained in a box. He created the box. He created the silver and the gold. So how can silver and gold be God when he created that? And here's what Paul's trying to show us. Here's what he's trying to say. To the Athenians and to us, a lot of times we become guilty of having a very, very small view of God. We make God very, very small. Think about it. Really? I mean, if you were to stand back logically and think about it, do you really think that new couch from Pottery Barn is God? Of course not. But for the past month, what have you been spending your treasure on? You've been spending your time thinking about it. Oh, I want that couch. You've been spending your talent, which is figuring out how to spend money. Figuring out ways. Well, if I put it on this card for 2 months, then I can move it to that card for 2 months. We can bounce about. We can do it. Because that couch, this couch is going to make me so happy. So happy. Right? That's what we do. We worship created things instead of the creator of the things. I mean, the couch is a silly example, but how many times have you uttered this phrase to someone else or thought it to yourself? Seriously, be honest. How many times? If I could just have blank, then I'd be happy. Just insert whatever it is. Could be money. Could be a boyfriend. Could be a girl. I don't know what it is. Could be a new job. If I could just have blank, then I'll be happy. If our family could just have, then we'll be safe. Then we'll be secure. Or maybe you've never even actually thought that. You really haven't. But your actions are showing it. Because of what you're working towards. Because of where you're spending your treasure, your time, your talent, and your resources. Oh, I'm going to work so hard to get that new job. Oh, I'm going to work so hard to get that new boyfriend. Oh, I'm going to work so hard to do those things. Right? I do it. In my house, you know what the shrine is? The television. It has prime placement in the house. If you walked into my house, you would know, whoa, that guy likes television. You know, we keep it up real nice and high. Try to keep the kids' hands off of it because we don't want them to touch it. Because see, idols, they don't like to be dirty. We need to keep them clean, you know? Got to keep them clean and shiny. Got to keep them looking good. I saw some of you wash your cars 3 times a week. Because, man, it got quiet. Because we want them to look good. We want them to look shiny. Now, let me give my disclaimer that I always give. None of those are bad things. None. If you have a car and you love it and you want to wash it every single day, wash it every day. If you have a television and you're glad to have it, put it up there and let everybody see it. Those are not bad things, but you know what I'm going to say because you've heard it before. They are terrible gods. They're absolutely horrible gods. They can't give you what you're looking for. They can't. And they never will. Ever. You know why? Because they were not designed for that. Hear this. Creation is meant to be enjoyed. Only the Creator is meant to be worshipped. You get that? Creator? Creation. In case you don't wonder what that means this. Creator is God. Everything else is creation. Everything. God, creation. God is meant to be worshipped. Creation is meant to be enjoyed. But we flip it, don't we? And we worship creation. And we spend our time, our talent, our treasures chasing all these things that we think are going to make us happy, that we think are going to fulfill us, that we think are going to make us whole. And then we kind of enjoy God a little bit. We kind of enjoy God. If it's a Sunday and the kids are already up and we don't really have anything else going on, yeah, we could probably make it to church today. Let's go. Because the music's good, man. And that Trey guy, he's crazy. We'll enjoy that. And then we can go home and have worship. We'll spend our week worshiping. Spend our time, our talent, our money chasing what's going to make us happy. And then 1 to 2 Sundays a month, we'll go enjoy God a little bit. And see, what God is screaming to us is you've got it backwards. What you don't understand is all those things that are created, they're created by me, and I want you to enjoy them. I want you to enjoy them how they're actually meant to be enjoyed. But instead, you're looking to them like you're God. Silly girl out there, you're looking at your boyfriend like he's God. You're looking at your boyfriend expecting to give you value and worth every day. And you leave in the morning, he didn't tell me I was pretty today, so I guess I'm not valuable. God's up there saying, you're valuable because I say you're valuable. I say you're pretty. I created you. Start worshiping me, and the first thing I'm going to do is show you, you don't need him because he's a jerk. Kick him to the curb. Because he's taking advantage of the fact that you need him. And you don't. You don't. Worship the Creator. Enjoy His creation. Don't get it the other way. This is where it gets good, though. I'm not going to leave you hanging today. This is what Paul says. He says, God overlooked people's ignorance about these things in earlier times. But now He commands everyone everywhere to repent of their sins and turn to Him. For He has set a day for judging the world with justice by the man He has appointed. And He proves to everyone who this is by raising him from the dead. Paul tells the Athenians, guys, God's been orchestrating this whole thing. Whole thing. Because He wants to be known by you. He even took this amazing step of sending Himself, sending His Son to live on this earth. Perfect, sinless life. Because see, what you may not have figured out is, you know, you think, God, whatever, I can work my way to Him, but that's not the way God works. God's holy, God's perfect, and we're not. We worship idols. We get dirty. We make mistakes. And so God had to fix it. And so what He did is God sent His Son, and He said, all right, Son, here's the deal. Go to earth, be perfect, then I'm going to kill you. And Jesus was like, what now? I was with you till the last part. What? All of it was going to work. All of it was going to work. Because God's holy. And what we do is called sin. We make mistakes. we don't follow God. We don't trust him. And unfortunately for us, what that means is because God's perfect, he can't be a part of anything that's not perfect. So it's not like, well, if I do a couple bad things, but I go to church enough, I can kind of balance out the scale. There is no balancing of the scale. It's one and done. You're out. And so that's the shape we're in. That's why we've created all these other things, by the way. That's why we've created them. Because we know inside we need something. And so we create all these things. And we chase them because we think that's going to fill the hole we have. How's that working? That's what I thought. And so what Jesus did is when Jesus actually died on the cross, what God did is God took every mistake you've ever made, I've ever made, will ever make, every person in the world, and he said, all right, all those mistakes, he put them on Jesus, and he said, you're guilty for all of them, and you have to die. Boom, he died. And what that means is the mistakes you and I have made in God's eyes, they're gone. Because he's already punished Jesus for them. And see, then 3 days later, Jesus woke up. It really happened. Not a joke. It literally happened. He literally died. 3 days later, he literally came back to life. Because God brought him back to life. Because God wanted to scream to me and you, not only can you be forgiven, not only can you be made clean in front of me, but you can actually live your life on a day-to-day basis to honor me, to glorify me, to serve me. Because that's what you were created to do. That's why I made you. And all this creation, all this stuff out there, it's my gift to you. I want you to enjoy it. I want you to love every second of it. But you got to worship me. And then you can enjoy my creation. But worship me. Worship me. You see, the Athenians, like us, like I said at the beginning, they had a little idea that they might have been missing out. That's why they had the idol to the unknown God. And the verse says, I didn't really touch on it then because I wanted to save it till now. The verse there says, Paul says, the God to whom you're referring here, I want to talk to you about. Because your hearts told you about him. You are already worshiping God without knowing it. They were already worshiping God without knowing it. That's why they had put that unknown God there, because there was something inside of them that says, there's got to be something else. There's got to be more. And some of you have felt that. There's got to be more than this. There's got to be more to this life than what I'm doing right now. There's got to be more. And what I want you to know is, the God of the universe is the one that put that in you. And he's been trying your whole life to subtly show you, there is more, it's me. There is more, it's me. We live in Myrtle Beach. Have you ever been on the beach at sunrise? It's breathtaking. It's breathtaking. You know who it is that takes your breath away? God. That feeling you get when you see that a sunset somewhere else, or when you see a beautiful mountain range, that just overwhelming sense of, I've never been to the Grand Canyon, but I've heard when you're at the Grand Canyon, you can feel it. Do you know what that is? That's God. That is the God of the universe giving you a little kiss on the cheek, saying, I'm real. I'm here, and I'm ready when you are. It's the feeling you get when you actually help someone else, not kind of manipulate, help someone else to get something back for you, but when you genuinely do something nice for somebody else, that sense you get, that's God. The feeling you get when you look at your kids, that just complete and utter adoration, that's God. That's God touching you and saying, see how that feels? That's how I feel about you. It really is. Now I'm waiting on you. I'm here. I've orchestrated this entire thing to get you here at this moment to tell you I love you. That's the God of the universe talking to you. And I know it because the Bible tells me so. Romans 1, 19 to 20 says this, says, talking about us, they know the truth about God because he has made it obvious to them. For ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and the sky. Through everything God made, they can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power, and his divine nature. So they have no excuse for not knowing God. That's as plain as I can make it. You and I, one day, whether you believe it or not, are going to stand before God. And it's going to be real simple. He knows you or he doesn't. And he has done everything humanly possible to be known by you. He came to earth. He gave his son. He gives you sunsets. He gives you those moments where I believe heaven literally touches earth. And in that moment, you know there's got to be a God. It's just a week later when it wears off, but you aren't sure. Or maybe some of you, right now, you're having a heaven-touching earth moment. Right now, your heart's beating a little faster than it should be. And you don't know why. You don't know what's going on. You've heard this message 1,000 times. You've talked yourself out of it. You know this God thing isn't real. But everything in you right now is screaming that it is. And maybe you're scared because you've tried other stuff. And I'm here to tell you, you don't have to be scared of this. Because this is the God of the universe. He created you. He created everything in you. And he says, come home. He says, I'm here. Learn to worship the Creator and I will show you the blessings of my creation. The creation I created is a gift for you. But you have to come home. And I believe with all my heart some of you want to do that today. We saw an amazing move of God the first hour, and I believe that God wants to move again right now. So I invite you right now to bow your heads, close your eyes. And if you were to say today, that's me. I've been worshiping things. I've been chasing things. I'd like to give a shot of worshiping the Creator of the things. If that's you, it's very simple. I'm going to pray a prayer aloud. You just pray it in your heart. You talk to God. Ask Him to change you. It's very simple. Father, this is all new and confusing. But yeah, I'm worshiping things. I'm trusting things to make me happy. I'm trusting things to make me feel safe. I'm trusting people to make me feel safe. And I want to trust you. So, I don't understand everything, but I know I want to serve you. I know I want to worship the Creator. God, I believe that your son Jesus actually came to earth and died for me. I'm not sure I've ever believed it before, but I do now. And I believe the only way I can have a relationship with you is through him. And so right now I commit to living my life with you, talking to you, hearing from you, and letting you lead me, letting you be my Lord and my God. Just help me the rest of the way. Now, I want to keep your heads bowed and eyes closed. If you prayed that today, I want you to know the angels in heaven are going crazy because you've come home, because you finally stepped into what God created you to be, and that's having a relationship with him. And what I want you to do two things for me. One, we want to know if you prayed that prayer. We want to be able to rejoice with you. We want to be able to pray for you. This is a lifelong journey. It starts today. It doesn't end today. It starts today. And so as your pastor, I want to know. So I'm going to count to three. And when I get to three, I want you to shoot your hand up in the air as fast as you can. If today you prayed that prayer for the first time and you meant it. Here we go. Don't think about it. Don't ask questions. Don't look around. Just raise your hand. Ready? One, two, three. Shoot your hand up in the air as fast as you can get them up. As high as you can get them. Shoot them up. Keep shooting them up. Keep going. Keep going. Keep shooting them up. Amen.